You're listening to the Nate Lull Podcast. Download each new episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And now, here's Nate.
Today is episode 190 here on the Nate Lull Podcast. I'm your host, Nate Lull. Always appreciate you checking back for new content. My guests today on episode 190, I'm pretty much going to be a fanboy the whole time. I have Josh Brown and Kwame Patterson in studio, Oneana grads and Oneana legends, I have to say. If you followed high school basketball in the 90s in our area, which it was such a tremendous time for high school boys basketball and girls basketball, you're going to know these guys. So Josh, of course, the first 1,000-point scorer in Oneana boys basketball history. Kwame, a phenomenal athlete. All you really have to do is say his first name, and people will remember him even up to today. So great to sit down and chat with these guys. And just a little note, they are best friends, and they have stayed in touch all these years. They talk pretty much every day. So there's a lot of banter in today's episode, and I just want to make sure our listeners don't think that maybe they are upset with each other, or maybe one of them is cocky or something like that. I mean, this is really just tongue-in-cheek, sitting down, hanging out with the boys type of stuff. So if you hear something in there today, I promise you it's all in good fun. We had so many laughs during this episode. It was really one of my favorites that I've had a chance to do, and I learned a ton. These guys playing in the state tournament for basketball, going and having a career with Coach Z as their coach, I thought that was really cool to hear about and kind of peek behind the curtain about what was going on back in those days. These guys were gym rats, whether it be at the boys' club, up at Oneana High School, trying to sneak into Suco and Hartwick to play pickup games, playing down at Neowah Park, you name it, these guys did it. So I hope you'll enjoy this episode today with Josh and Kwame. Before we jump into the interview today, we have a ton of podcast sponsors. This is a long list, but they make our show possible. So our sponsors include NYCM Insurance of Edmiston, Shenango Memorial Hospital of Norwich, Shindello Federal Credit Union of Franklin, the Amphenol Corporation of Sydney, Preferred Mutual Insurance Company of New Berlin, Sportsfield Specialties of Delhi. We have SFCU, the Leatherstocking Group of Cooperstown, your registered mortgage brokers. We have the Franklin Railroad Museum, Benson Agency Real Estate of Oneonta, Mirabito Gresham Insurance, Certified Auto Outlet of Oneonta, Clark Sports Center of Cooperstown, Certified Financial Planner Ed Curley, the Delaware National Bank of Delhi, New York Pizzeria of New Berlin, the Rinker Insurance Agency of Afton, McCready Motors in Norwich, Acco Brands of Sydney, Oleout Creek Golf Course in Franklin, Quality Hardwoods and Twin Valley Finish Lumber, Spike's Pizza and Grocery of Edmiston, the NBT Insurance Agency, DTC Delhi Telephone Company, Mirabito Energy Products, Superior Heating and Air Duct Cleaning of Sydney, Cohen and Fraser Builders of Franklin and Unadilla, Advantage Maytag Home Appliance Center in Oneonta, JM Electrical Contracting of Bainbridge, and the SUNY Delhi Golf Management Program. So today is episode 190 with Josh and Kwame. Sit back, relax, and I know you're going to enjoy this one here on the Nate Lull Podcast. Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's another edition today of the Nate Lull Podcast. This is episode 190, so we're coming up on 200 real fast. I promise we'll do something special. Actually, since I have Oneana guys here today, episode 100 was Joe Hughes, and he was really, really awesome. He told some great stories, but been excited about this one for a while. We've been trying to put it together. We don't have the full dream team here today, but we got two of the three. So we have Josh Brown and Kwame Patterson, class of 97, guys?
Yes.
Okay. That's awesome. But Kwame, I want to start with you. People would love to know where you're at today and what you're up to. And we just start off with that.
Okay. I am currently in North Carolina, Rayford, North Carolina, to be exact. I am an administrator, vice principal or assistant principal, and also coach basketball, varsity basketball down there. I've coached varsity football and varsity girls softball, which I loved.
Wow. Nice.
But my wife said, I was away, you know, all year long. So it's like, pick one. So, I stuck with basketball and, I've been the head coach there since like 2009, 2010 season.
How many kids in the school?
About 2,000 to 2,100.
Wow.
Yeah. So, pretty big schools, like an open campus. And I enjoy it. So I think I'm one of very few, coaches who are also administrators. So that's great. And, before I became administrator, they're like, oh, you got to stop coaching, you got to stop coaching.
Yeah.
And you can't do that. You can't do both. And then the board said, no, I think we'll keep him. So, he can still coach and be an administrator. So I appreciate them. And, you know, I still get to do what I love.
Just in case they're listening.
Yeah.
They would not listen to this.
And Josh, you're still around. Love seeing you in Oneonta. I've kind of connected with you over the last few years, but, tell people what you're up to today.
Sure. So I've been back in the Oneonta area since about 2013. Obviously, I went to high school here, Cobeskill, and then Hartwick, then moved to Boston for 10 years-ish. And now, so I've been back since 2013. I'm in the automotive industry, so I work for a marketing company out of New York City. I do a lot of traveling, but I'm home every night mostly. And
that's good.
Which is – hear that, Ange? I'm home every night, Eric. And, you know, just a 15-year-old daughter and 5-year-old son and just living the life in Oneonta.
Real quick, you and I had an awesome chance this past weekend to work up in Cooperstown where the Hall of Famers, their golf event. We were each on a hole. Did you have a favorite moment of the day from all the guys that came through?
It was pretty amazing. Like, I, cool. I was telling the story all day today because it's kid in a candy store. Like, so I played basketball, but I'm a baseball fanatic from when I was a little kid. We can get into that later if you want to, Kwame. But I'm on the green with Mariano Rivera, and I'm lining up a putt for him. And all day, you know, everything goes towards the water, so every putt goes toward the water. And his putt, he must have been right on the ridge. It went away from the water, and he looked at me, and he kind of yelled at me in Spanish. And I only picked up one phrase, and I'm pretty sure it was a swear word. And you know, we both laughed about it, but that was. You know, I'm a Mets fan, but
right.
Rivera, that was my favorite moment. He's a great guy. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, he was great. So I was on the hole before you. You were on 10. I was on 9.
Yep.
One of his partners was down this hill a little bit. He chipped it up towards the green, and it flew right by Rivera's head. I mean, it was so close, and they're laughing. But I'm like, what if I just saw him get his head knocked off at the Hall of Fame golf thing? But that was
are you certified to render assistance?
Yeah, no, I would have been blamed for the trouble that ensued. So
yeah. The only thing I got blamed for was poorly reading putts, which I do in my own life. So I didn't really feel that bad that I was giving them bad directions. So.
I got lucky. Only a couple guys asked, and I was like, God, I don't want to say the wrong thing here. But that was cool. That was a cool experience.
I'll do it again next year for sure.
So to kind of rewind, Kwame, I've always been curious about, you know, how you came to Oneonta, if you were originally from Oneonta, and just kind of how the trio of you and Josh and your friend John Greco as well all got together, because I've heard so much you've been described as the Three Musketeers together, and we'll get into that. But how did you end up in Oneonta?
Well, first, I would like to say, take this opportunity to let you know that I am the glue between Josh and John. You know, I'll just put that out there. But I came from I was born in the Bronx, New York.
Okay.
And my mom, my whole family, are all New York people. And I guess my mom's cousins went to Oneonta State and had heard about this great place, Oneonta. So my mom thought, I guess, the Bronx is too bad. So about first grade or so, I moved up to upstate New York to Oneonta, and I met John Greco. And he was, this blonde-haired kid from Italy. And, you know, we became friends, and we didn't do a lot of sports. And like I said, you know, Josh taught me how to play basketball, supposedly. So but we, you know, hooked up with Josh and through the boys club, and we've been stuck together ever since. So like first grade.
Yeah. Josh, do you remember the first time you got together with Kwame? You started playing with him?
I mean, I vividly recall the first time we were playing basketball, but at least the first time I remember, right? So we were obviously at the boys club where we were club scrubs, right?
Yes.
That's what they call this. I lived directly across the street from the boys club, like that house right across the street. I lived in an apartment there.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So I was there every single minute that that place was open. Like that was where I lived. So I do remember playing with Kwame, and he didn't know how to dribble yet. So he was double dribbling. And I was very, at that age, I was very concerned with the rules of the game. So I was like, nope, that's double dribble. Check it up. My ball. So
he's still the same way.
Yeah. Although not in basketball anymore. But yeah, so I vividly recall, 1985, maybe 1984, 85.
No, 86, 87, the trophies. I remember the trophies that I won when I beat him.
Oh, okay.
I still have those OBC trophies. And
those are big deals.
It's too early in the podcast to start pulling out these rivalries. Okay. We'll get there, buddy. Slow your roll.
But coming full circle, Greco wasn't so much into sports. He is more eclectic and likes to
movies
and film and stuff.
Okay.
And I roped him in to the sports, so I had a little bit of that, the movie stuff, and also had a little bit of the sports stuff with Josh. So that's why I'm the middle guy.
The glue.
You were quite the star.
The glue.
Well, of course, I had to talk to Coach Z before you guys came in here.
Gosh.
And he basically confirmed what you just said. He said, these guys, if I had a Saturday morning practice, 9, 10 in the morning, as soon as our practice was done, they would beeline it down to the boys' club. And they'd play there until 6 o'clock, until they were going to get kicked out of there, shutting the lights off. Then you guys might go up to the college, try to go up and get a run at Suco or Hartwick. Yes. He said they don't make guys like that anymore. So was that the thing? It was just play all darn day.
100%. So we played, we'd have practice. Then we'd either go to the boys club or go to Hartwick or Suco or to Niwa. Like if it was summer, we played at Niwa from, we just wait for games to come. I don't know why it was like that. You know, what drew us to, I don't know if it was just the competition.
It was normal for us,
Yeah.
We would find a place to play. I remember sneaking into Hartwick. We snuck into the downstairs gym. If we couldn't get in the main gym, like where the handball courts were.
Yeah.
Playing that little court. Worked our way up to the main gym. Going to sneak into Suco.
You think people get used? We still got kicked out all the time.
Yeah, we did get kicked out. But eventually, like, these kids are good kids. And so sometimes they let us in. But Niwa Park was always open, and we would play. Guys would
So the bats came out.
Yes.
And they were like, all right.
Even when the Yankee games are over, they're playing, Frank Sinatra, and we're still playing. We're playing full court one-on-one if we have to, with the lights on and doing stuff. So I wouldn't let my kids do that, I guess.
Yeah.
A little too dangerous, but we were doing it, at such a young age, and, it seemed very normal to us.
Yeah.
Coach Z said the only thing specifically about Josh is once you guys got going, it was all good, but there had to be about a 20-minute warm-up for your back before every practice.
I think stretching is normal. I think I was ahead of my time. 20 minutes would be – when I got into college, it was more like an hour. It was ask Heidi Buzzy used to throw me at Hartwick. She'd put me in the ice bath. I literally did that every single day after practice for, whatever it was, 20 minutes and 48 degree.
Oh.
So in high school, it was timid. Once I got to college, it was before practice, it was heat on the hamstrings, heat on the low back, stretching for 45 minutes. Then you practice. And then after that, it was ice bath every single day. So, yeah, my body, I wasn't built to be a basketball player. I'm probably more of an accountant body. But for some reason, I as long as I took care of it a little bit, I was able to get on
but
the court.
Josh was like, I don't know if he knows this, but no, he's older than us and everything.
Like 4 months.
But he was like the older of us.
Okay.
Anyway.
4 months, everybody.
Okay. But whatever Josh did was like the cool thing. Like, Josh got hurt. Oh, cool. So one time my back was hurting. So I got to lay down like Josh and put my feet up. I'm like, it's not cool to be hurt all the time and be like old man Brown and everything.
That was my nickname from like – Gary DeLello. I got a couple of nicknames from Gary. Grandpa was one from when I was probably like 7 or 8 years old. So I lived up to it. So good job, Gary.
He's always hurt, yes.
Well, Gary was the guy. Coach Z said he was at that time thinking when you guys were younger, maybe he was thinking about getting out. And it was Gary who said, there's this crew of 4th, 5th graders coming. You got to hang on until they come through. So
he did.
One other thing that Coach Z mentioned to me is that he brought you guys up early. Which, is more normal today. I think we see a lot of
seventh, eighth, ninth graders playing varsity in their small schools. But back then, real big deal to come up as a freshman. So you guys both came up, I think he said maybe mid-season as freshmen.
So I came up mid-season. Kwame, you want to take this one?
Sure, if you want me to.
All right, I'll let you talk.
All right. It's how it went down, you know. No, Josh and I were, when we were in seventh grade, after our seventh grade season, we got moved up to freshman basketball. We played ninth grade. Okay. And then and we were in eighth grade. Didn't allow kids to play JV, but I guess we had to pass some tests. So we did something. We were able to play JV. Well, ninth grade came around and tryouts came around, but I played football. And actually, I broke my foot at the end of the football season.
I didn't know that.
And but I made the basketball team without trying out. So I was already on varsity. And I was already on a varsity team, and Josh had to play JV still as a ninth grader. Mm. So he wasn't there right away, and I have proof because if you look at our team photo, he's with the JV guys and I'm with the varsity guys.
But I played the first varsity game.
Yeah. Technically, you played the first varsity game, yes.
So even before the first game, they had you up?
So no. So he, because he was hurt. So he didn't play. What did you miss, like 5-6 games?
Yeah, something like that.
So first four games I was in JV, Jason Ronovich got hurt. So he needed someone to come up varsity, and I was playing very well at JV. So
no, you played one game before me because I
I was in game 4 or 5 in the array. So I played the first varsity game.
He played it first.
The moral of the story, the point of the story is I played before varsity before you did.
Yeah, but you're on JV though.
What was it like being the young guys coming up? Because there's a lot of Oneonta tradition, so many great athletes, which I also want to kind of ask you who your Oneonta Mount Rushmore is. That's something we've been kind of doing. But what was it like coming up, you know, as young guys? Was that intimidating?
So we've played – like, you know, we were playing with Ronnie Sanchez and Mike Spitzel when we were 13, 14 years old. So, and my brother, Zach's 2 years older. So he was on varsity. We played JV with him and we were on varsity. So there was none of that. And we'd known Miss Coach Z forever. So and Brad ran such a tight ship, you know, that, you know, when we moved up, there was nothing like it was normal for us. Like it was like, oh, finally, here we are.
Yeah, and I felt like with our success, like growing up through Little League to Pee Wee Sports, and almost like we were protected. Like they didn't like say, give us any, you know, feeling
jealousy.
No jealousy. Like, and Jason Ronovich was a 20-point-plus scorer. Brad Z, you know, coach's son, point guard. You know, this Clark Shields. You know, been shooting forever.
Clark Shields. I know him very well. Great guy.
Chad Whitbeck with his size 17 foot shoe. And all those guys just made it feel like home. Like, you guys are fine. You guys could, you know, belong here. So I never, ever felt with that team, with those guys in basketball, with only out of basketball, I've never felt out of place or anything.
Right. Sure. Especially in the Cooperstown tournament when you shot the game winning shot and airballed it. Like, everybody made you feel so.
No.
Uh-oh.
I don't want to go off too much, but
he can edit it. Yeah. But we'll get the Elias Sports Bureau involved if you have to.
No. Oh, hold on. Okay.
I just read it.
No,
it
wasn't airball, actually. Okay.
We get blocked?
No, it was the semi-final game, and I was a freshman.
Semi-final game? There's only four teams in the tournament.
Right. Semi-final game, and I hit the game winner, you know.
That's true.
As a freshman.
That's true.
Patterson lifts OHS.
That is a true story.
And I was, as a freshman, you know, you're going back to sleep over at John's house, and his dad goes, hey, look at the paper. Patterson lifts OHS. I scored 4 points that game. I lift OHS for 4 points, right? And it says all this stuff about great Kwame Patterson, this. At the bottom, it says Seth Schaefer scores 53.
You know? I was going to say, that had to be Seth Schaefer time, right?
The next game, you know, we're playing against Cooperstown for the championship. And same situation, I'm open, so I'm going to shoot it. We have Jason Ronovich, who was 6'5". You know, if he's on the block, guy's on his back, wide open. And I go in, and I shoot it anyway. In the closing seconds, I go to shoot it, and Justin, He's going to hate me. I forgot his name. From Cooperstown, Justin Baldhead. I saw him a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Tall, about 6'3". Yes. Comes over and blocks the crap out of my shot. Because I was looking for Reed Nagelschmidt. I couldn't see him anywhere. So
yes.
Justin comes out and knocks my shot out of bounds. And I think we lose and everyone. But even then, like, honestly, even then, it wasn't like any animosity or anything that I knew of.
Right.
Jimmy, from him, but not from.
Of course, especially a better story to tell 25 years later. When
not those guys. Like, they were, you know, following my bad decision.
No, they were. It was really, and with Zach being on the team, it just, you know, there was, you know, there wasn't any need for a buffer, but there would have been had we needed it.
Right,
so.
Right, yeah.
Exactly. What was it like? I mean, those are some big Cooperstown names you guys just threw out. And I've always wanted to talk to someone who played with or against Seth Schaefer, because I mean, he was just kind of the man, it seemed like, in the area. What was that like?
I mean, I remember we played against him. Like, we went to see him in Cooperstown against Donald Foyle, which was a crazy game.
Crazy.
We played in 3-on-3 against him. Like, mm-hmm. He's just a different. I mean, he was like a deer running. Like, he never got tired, and his three was just so pure. It was you know, for like us, and that was before the 3-pointer was like what it is today.
Sure.
I mean, way before, and he was. I mean, when I go back to like my Mount Rushmore of people I saw live, like in this area, Seth is like right there. I mean, he was,
oh yeah,
he was ridiculous.
He was unbelievable. Like, I remember one time he came down on a fast break, you know, Coach Z, you know, he ingrained in us, like, you got to dribble 5 times and make this pass and thumbs down and this. So, I go to the foul line and stop and jump stop and, you know, pass to someone. Seth Schaefer comes down and pulls up from the 3-point from the top of the key on a 3-on-1 break and shoots it. And I look over, I'm like, that's allowed? Like, we're allowed to do that in basketball? You know, I was just mind boggled, but, you know, and he had the green light to then. He was a great player and he played hard and, all those teams. Justin Smith, I think that's what it is. But anyway. So, it was just great watching, you know, playing in this area with those teams. And and then my like I saw one other guy do stuff like that in the Empire State games when I played. And some guys were doing that stuff. And I was like, I can't do that back in Oneonta. We got to make 10 passes before a shot. Slow down the ball, you know, just playing Z ball.
So I heard a Empire State game story today about you. And something about you didn't exactly make the team bus. Do you remember this?
Oh, gosh.
I don't know if you want to tell it.
Yeah,
I can fill some gaps in.
Sure. I was told, like, it was like the second year.
You're going to hear two versions. You're going to hear Nate's story, which is the truth, and whatever Kwame conjures up right now. This is hilarious.
No, like, I don't take direction very well. This is my second year at Empires. And I was like, it's in Syracuse. I think it was in Syracuse. I don't know what year, but I had to meet someone in Syracuse.
Yes.
At Henniger High School.
Yes. Yep.
And meet coach from Whitney Point. Jeez. Witek.
Mark Witek, he said, was one of the coaches.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, long story short, I can get there now. But the way I went was, as soon as I got off the Bainbridge exit, I took a left towards Windsor instead of going straight through Bainbridge and going up like through Green and Whitney Point. But I went through Windsor, long story short, but I made it to, I randomly got off an exit and made it at Henniger High School. They're like, you can't leave your car. Oh, no, I'm supposed to go to coach's house at Whitney Point. But it's like, you can't leave your car here. We have summer school. Your car is going to get vandalized and you're so you can't leave it here, so you have to take us. I forgot where I took it for the whole weekend where I was there he goes, filming me. But no, that's the true story. I made it there easily.
So coach says,
okay,
this was his version, yes, that you were trying to get there and that you missed the bus. They said they couldn't wait for you,
right?
And that you just had to soldier on and drive. The games were in Buffalo. And you had to drive to Buffalo. This was his memory.
That's right. I did. Okay, oh, I couldn't leave my car.
So you have Kwame's story and the truth.
No, I said I couldn't leave my car at Henniger High School during summer school. Uh-huh. I did.
What? So let's rewind to what car were you driving back then?
Yes.
My Geo Metro.
Geo Metro.
Green hatchback.
When he told me that, I was like, that is the car right there.
So he had that car. Johnny had a Pepto. His license plate was Pepto-B. He was driving around a hot pink tracker, geo tracker. So this is what you see in, at Oneonta High School parking lot.
That was the
geo tracker with a license plate Pepto-B and Kwame's Geo Metro.
Did you have the minivan then?
I had the minivan.
Minivan Mafia, man.
That is so 1997.
Yeah, I had a sweet minivan.
So Coach Z says, I wasn't going to go to the games, but I decided to drive to Buffalo so Kwame can follow me home. He goes, I didn't think he was going to make it home.
Yes.
Yeah. We owe a lot to Coach Z. I mean, yes. He drove us. I mean, you know, there wasn't an AAU on every street corner back then. Right. So we were playing for the Southern Tier Storm. And
that's right.
We needed help, you know, 2-3 times a week for quite a while, getting help, you know, when we were too young to drive. So,
oh, yeah.
He didn't get lost.
Jeez, we had to drive an hour at least to –
yeah,
to play AAU when Oneonta's got like 5 right now.
It is crazy how things have changed. I can remember there being one club around maybe.
Yeah.
It wasn't really a thing. Your baseball coach might get mad at you because what are you doing with this AAU thing? Now it's so different.
Oh, yeah.
So different. Do you think playing against these older guys, going up to the college, you're not afraid to get a run with those guys, did that prepare you to play the teams you were going to play? Must have been sus still at that point? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because you look at the old sus, and it's like every team had a guy that I'm like, that guy was really good. That guy was really good. There was no easy nights. Do you think that helped prepare you at a young age to get ready to play in that type of a league?
With me, I think it does, but I didn't notice it.
You were just playing.
I was just playing, yeah. Honestly.
So Kwame was more man-child at that point. I was, you know, at 14 years old, I was 6'2", 135 pounds. So going up against Hartwick players, I mean, I could name them, like, even, you know, because they were, you know, but they were Nick Lambros's guys. Like, they just beat the crap out of me every single, you know.
Yeah.
So it just made me, like, I wasn't instantly going to get stronger, but I could learn how to play against stronger players. I wasn't necessarily super athletic. I wasn't necessarily super quick, but I could do a lot of things well enough. And I think that that's where I learned how to score unconventionally. I wasn't a great shooter. I just knew how to score. Mm-hmm. And that's where I learned how to score. Like, you know, I wasn't getting an open 15 footer against those guys. They'd throw in the third row.
Right.
So I learned how to pump fake. I learned how to, you know, I learned moves to score against players that, you know, were stronger than me or taller than me.
Like, and I think I grew confidence because they didn't take it easy on me, you know. They watched me. I was the kid at you know, summer camp. The 12-year-old, watch this 12-year-old dunk. He's dunking against Conrad McRae, you know,
yeah,
or Mike Hopkins. You know, when he came down and, oh yeah, you make a dunk, you win the dunk contest. Even though Conrad does some windmill 360, yeah, right, and stuff, but he's only 12 and he could dunk all that stuff. But like those guys, like Eric Wilson, yeah, and those guys they hit every shot in your face. They made you play defense. You know, they didn't take it, you know, take it easy on you at all.
Which,
so,
yeah, definitely converts to us, you know, in high school where we're playing against, you know, tough competition and, you know, we're just like, all right, we need to find a way today.
So Coach was also telling me one of your big rivals, at least for you, Josh, at the time, was a guy from Delhi, Greg Belkavich. Remember playing against him? He said you hated playing against him.
he was a full grown man in high school.
And
actually, I went to Hartwick with Greg. Like,
we're, oh, you did?
Really good friends. So we played together at Hartwick. he actually just got inducted this year into the Hartwick Hall of Fame.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So Balky was just he's a man child. He was just a, you know, a huge human being with monster hands, and he was just, you know, he was 6'3", 230 in high school.
Oh,
I was 6'3", 175. So, you know, again, with those guys, you got to find a different way. And a different way, you know, when he's guarding you is pass the ball to Kwame or Greg or Hesse, and hopefully they can,
yeah,
or, you know, Matt Miller.
But what about his other rival?
Who? I don't know. Who we got?
I don't know.
From Whitney Point, Jimmy Evans.
Jimmy.
Oh.
Yeah, Jimmy was at Whitney Point.
I didn't realize that.
So we played against Jimmy up until junior year, and then he went to Forks.
Okay.
And then we didn't play against him after that. But I don't know, he was mine. He was ours. I mean,
Well, he's your side. I had no, like, they put the other guy on.
We actually, my first college game, I was at Cobuskill. He was at Broome, was against Jimmy.
You couldn't get away from him.
He was a, you know, he's just a great basketball player.
Yeah.
And the things he's doing now down in Binghamton with the
– it's good stuff.
Bulldogs, yeah, that's great for this area. So
was it the Norwich rivalry? Was there a big rivalry that you guys had in league?
Not for basketball.
So, yeah, I mean, we never played – we didn't play Norwich in high school.
Really?
4 years of varsity.
We scrimmaged them.
Scrimmaged them. Yeah. That, yeah. So okay. Not once, right?
No. Didn't play once. Because I would have ate Kenny King's lunch. Just joking, Kenny.
I guess it was different. It was not aligned the same way as today. Like, yeah.
No, we were supposed to play them if we beat Waverly our freshman year. That Bob Laser squad. Yeah.
Oh, you were.
It was a blessing in disguise.
We ended up losing to Waverly by like one or two or something like that. Yeah. And Norwich was the next round against them. I would have loved to play against them, but never matched up. Now, football, obviously, that was our rivals. And I did beat Norwich a couple of times with Jeff Parker and those guys, scored touchdowns on them. And
they can't see you, so they can't tell.
Just a lot of old guys. It seemed like I was friends with everyone. Guys were so like nice to me from other schools and stuff. Like I was just always that. I never met a stranger, so, you know, seems like every school we went to, we were like buds. Yeah.
Well, that's why I felt. Like, you talk about rivalries. Like, we went to Golden Valley with the Walt guys, and we bunked together. So, like, when we play them, it was like, even if it was competitive and it was like, we were friends with all of them. Like, you know, the guys from Green, the guys from Walton, the guys from Whitney Point, like
Sydney.
Yeah. Like we hung out with them. We run into them. We were in Boston. We run into this kid from Green like 15 years later.
Really?
And he's like, Kwame. we played against you. So like, it was weird. Like we didn't like,
and this is before Instagram and Twitter, they connected and stuff.
That's so what's amazing.
I'm listening to your podcast with the Norwich guys, which was awesome, by the way.
Thank you.
You know, that was, you know, they brought it way back. I remember Kwame and I went to that Chucky Gillette Bobby Laser game at Norwich. We were there.
We were
13 or 14 years old. But we didn't have that. Like, you know, Charlie Wyman's talking about, you know, the thing with the Johnson City fans and stuff like that. Like, we didn't get that treatment. I mean, we weren't Norwich. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to compare us. Like, we were not them. But we didn't get that ever until Marist. Right? They called us Hicks, called us Farmers. Like, there's chance.
Every time I dribble, they say, dribble, 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 pass, ball hog, ball. I'm like, I'm the all-time assist leader. How am I a ball hog? Because I'm passing these guys. But they'll say ball hog and all types of stuff. But, everywhere we went,
well-liked.
The Waverly Twins guys, like, you know, they were cool. Like, even after the game, I think Greg had his career high.
We got to talk about that game.
Just like everywhere we went,
I don't remember a single time. When I got to college, it was completely different. But when in high school, once a game ended, it was hugs and handshakes and great game. Like,
that's probably the way we carried ourselves, I believe, honestly. It's, you know, you're always a hero in your own movie, but like when you come back home to Oneonta, the teacher's like, oh, Kwame or they probably say to everyone, but like, it seems like we really did get along with just about everyone. We never walked around like we were better than anyone else. So, I don't know. It was just a good experience. So,
Well, I told Josh the other day, I was going to ask you this. There's certain names I feel like in my sports travels that you just have to say the name and people, doesn't matter how long ago it was. Like if you're down this neck of the woods, if you say Courtney Mattingly, everyone's like, oh yeah, BG, great player, right? It was 30 years ago or more. If people say Kwame,
that wasn't 30 years ago. Sorry. Settle back.
25.
Yeah. But if you say Kwame today or Josh Brown in Oneonta, it's still known.
Yeah.
You guys have not been forgotten about. What's that like for you coming home and you still can just walk around and talk to everybody? It's like you haven't left.
Yeah, honestly, it's pretty cool because like I haven't been here. I've lived in North Carolina long. I've lived in Oneonta. It's so weird. And it's really refreshing, and I feel like you're appreciated. Like you're not forgotten and everything.
It's good for his ego.
I could walk, but I'm like,
it's annoying to walk anywhere in Oneonta, maybe Otsego County with Kwame, because it's like you have to stop every 4 minutes because someone will know Kwame and Kwame's going to give them all of his time. So like for me, it's like they have no idea who I am. The tall white guy next to him, and I'm like, holy, I'm like, Kwame, like wrap it up. Like we've stopped 5 times already. You're not signing autographs. Let's move it along.
I heard it from my friends. Like we, they always say, I hate walking with you in Oneonta or going out with you. But I was like, yeah, you're just my friends, whatever. But I went this weekend to the Blendo Classic first annual.
And that was pretty cool.
I went down there and my kids were with me. So my 13-year-old Giovanni Patterson, shout out. And my nine-year-old Nico Patterson, shout out. There you go. And they were with me walking around. And my 13-year-old, he's real cool. Like, he's an athlete. He's going to be – actually, they're both pretty good.
Right.
But my 13-year-old, he's like in middle school. You know, he's – all you heard about was Kwame Patterson and this, and all these people are saying, hey, Kwame. He's like, Dad, I can tell you didn't know that person, did you? You're just saying yes and just talking about it. And then my 9-year-old, honestly, he had, after about 45 minutes, he's like, Dad, can I go home? You know too many people. I'm done, you know, hanging around. Can I go home?
I completely, I'm with, Nico, I'm with you, man. Like, it's annoying.
Yeah. And I took him home, but I was like, geez, it must be, it is pretty, I can see it being annoying. And I went to the pizza shop and I'm just friendly and I'm talking to one of the, it's like, oh, do you go to one at high school? And they're like, I graduate this year. I'm a senior or something. And it's like, yeah, I went there a long time ago, back in like 97. And they're like, oh, that's where my mom and dad went. I was like, wait, are you such and such, you know, Mari's daughter and Kaheem's, you know, daughter? Like, yeah, I am. Like, wait, how do you know them? I was like, oh, just tell them Kwame said hi. Oh, you're Kwame Patterson? Oh, my goodness. And my son was like, you're like, oh, Jesus, well, here we go again.
Me and I had a real life, like, interaction where he got to witness this.
I did.
In Cooperstown, we were on the, Nate was on the back of the golf cart and I was on the front, and Matt
Hazard, yep,
was driving us, and we're kind of talking back and forth a little bit about basketball, the area. We played against each other, the Cooperstown tournament, and in college. He has no idea who I am. And I'm like, oh, well, you probably remember, like, Kwame, right? Oh, yeah, I remember Kwame. Like,
yeah. That's what made me think. I was like, we got to talk about
that. Yeah. So I'm like, Nate, that happens to me all the time where I'm like, no one has any idea who I am. But as soon as I mention high school, Oneonta, and Kwame, I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember that.
I've been to Disney World with my family. Oh, like, Kwame, what are you doing? Like, Dad, how do you know someone in Disney World? Or we go to, like, you know, just random places. And
yeah.
But I think it's the name. It's not really me. It's just the name. Like, Kwame, it's a different name. So even though I think they were like, by the time I graduated, they're like three Kwames, all with a K. I'm the only one with the Q.
The only one with the Q.
But yeah, there's like this Kwame is singing Kwame. But you're the sports
Well, your
Kwame.
Mom knew how to spell it. That's why.
Well, you know, Josh, you had the 1,000 points. Yep. In high school, and I heard that Kwame said in his Oneonta Hall of Fame induction speech that he didn't have 1,000 points because he had to pass to you so much. So
he didn't have 1,000 points because we played Z-ball. If we played Mackie ball, we both would have had 2,000 points. That's for all you younger generation guys out there. No, I mean, I am the luckiest. There was no reason I scored 1,000 points in high school other than I played 4 years and I played with somebody who gave me layups every day. Like, there's without any doubt about it. Like, I wasn't a great shooter. I wasn't 6'9". Like, I'm a 6'3", 175-pound power forward, you know? So I knew how to make a layup. I knew how to catch a ball. And it just so happens I did it, you know, 500 times.
I mean, there's not many guys in that club, though, at OHS. And I mean, I cover all the schools down to the small schools around here, the D's and the C's. Oneonta, Norwich are the biggest schools I cover.
Mm-hmm.
And within that, there are not many guys who get to 1,000 points. It's pretty rare. I mean, it had been a long time until Graham Wooden got it just a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So what does that mean, anything special to you looking back on it? Like, I made that club?
I like to say I was the first one to do it. So, like, I laid the path for everybody else.
Right.
And I was the only one to do it for Coach Z, that's something that I take, because we really played pass the ball 5 times before you take a shot.
Yep.
But I also played, like, he, you know, believed pounding the ball inside. And so, you know, there was I had a lot of advantages, right? So yeah, it does mean something to me. I think it was really cool. And, like, you know, I look back on it now and, you know, I can't wait. Like, I just got my Hall of Fame plaque, right?
You're getting the proof of it.
Yeah. So my wife looks, she's like, you're the first player to score 1,000 points at Oneonta. I was like, yeah. And I was like, I told you this. And she's like, no. She's like, I didn't know you were such a big deal. My daughter was the same way. She's 15. She's like, you were the first one. I was like, yeah. I think that that's really cool. But that is a testament of, like, everything during that time to do with Oneonta. Like, I lived I lived in the lower deck of Oneonta, right? Which is not the best area. That's where I grew up. Like, but I was literally right across the street from the boys club. Boys and girls club. It was the boys club back then. So I spent every moment playing every game we could. I had Tim Pidgeon there mentoring me. Gary cool. DeLello. I should have said Gary first. I'm sorry, Gary. Gary. Tim was there. JB. Like, all these guys that, like, cared about us, right? Like,
right.
Kwame and I are guys that, like, we needed that in our life at that point. Like, yeah. We both grew up without dads around. So being at the boys club at that point was, like, the most important thing. Like, we both had strong moms. So I don't
right.
know. Shout out to Beanie and Crystal.
Yeah.
But we needed that side of it also, right? Like, we needed that mentorship and you know, those, you know, specifically Gary, but we all looked up to Tim because he was a mm-hmm. you know, unbelievable athlete. So we all wanted to be like, if we could beat Gary, right, then oh. you know, until we were nine and then it became easy, but like between the ages of 7 and 9, like, that was something that, like, mm-hmm. like, that was an advantage I mean I was there all the time, and that set the tone for me. And then having Kwame around, right? Having somebody that, like, is just so far superior of an athlete, like, all right, I got to get stronger. I got to get better at this and this, because, like, to play, like, he would beat me all the time once he learned how to dribble, and it was annoying. And then my brother was a couple, you know, and he yeah. would beat me, and then he would not take any mercy on me. So I'm like, I'm sick of this. Like, I need to get better. So, I mean, there was a lot, you know, coming up through. Sean Rivers, we got to
oh yeah,
get Sean Jeez. Rivers. He was our 7th grade coach, undefeated 7th grade.
Do you know anything about Sean Rivers?
I don't.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You can think about Sean's memory lane.
I'll go for a second, but the testament to Josh's 1,000 points, like, honestly, it was so special. The reason I can say I would have scored 1,000, yeah, but it was so much easier just giving it to someone who can score.
Right.
Like, he could score so easily. Like even my like my recruiting film and stuff, like the I'm getting recruited, but like, who is that guy? Who is that guy scoring? Mm. Who is that guy? He's like, he's only 6'3". He's like, oh, okay. You know, this.
He's
but,
only 6'3".
But Josh scored so easily, and he made the game so much easier for all of us. And he probably would have scored 2,000 points if he didn't blow out so many teams a lot of the times. And I, you know, would kick myself in the butt or like keep us in a little bit longer so I could score 1,000. I think I was just like, 9-something, you know.
Oh,
so
that's tough.
But with my assist, I count it to be over.
All right, there you go. We're on Sean Rivers. All right, let's go.
Sean Rivers. Well,
so it was an hour. We got an hour here.
I'm sorry. Background real quick about Sean Rivers. He came from Marquette, I think.
Really?
He went there after us.
Yeah, after. So but, he was a Suco. Coached us while he was a student,
yep.
right?
And
that's cool.
Yeah, and we were like, so the year was it his first year with us?
We were
undefeated that 7th grade.
7th grade,
and then Kwame and I got moved up in 8th grade, but he coached
the 8th grade team. There,
and then he went to Marquette. Yeah, went to Marquette.
That's right. But he was this good young coach. He had a funny accent, talking from Jersey and this, whatever. My first year, I was a point guard my whole life. Gary DeLello said, you know, just learn how to handle the ball. You know, if you're tall, you can still handle the ball. If you're short, you can handle the ball. So make sure you can handle the ball. And I was pretty quick. And I was point guard, but I was tall. You know, that I was like 5'7 as a 12-year-old. And Josh was tall too. So we're, you know,
yeah.
And we go to middle school, and this young coach puts me at center. And I'm like, what the heck is he doing? I'm a point guard. And with Josh and all the tall kids, you know. I think he got sick or went away somewhere, and one of our teammates' brother, who coached me in like travel, like you know, only had a boys club basketball
or rotary
basketball, came
rotary,
and coached us. And he's like, I want to put you back at point guard. I came back to a point guard, and when Sean came back, what are you doing? He's like, you didn't see this? And from then on, I never, you know, went back to the block again, you know? So, but Sean was a great guy. He was a good mentor. He helped us out, and we still talk, you know, even through, you know, social media and stuff to this day. Talk about great memories and guys who used to play, but.
You know, it's oftentimes I interview guys who are maybe tight in school, and then you grow apart. You're in different parts of the country. You're going to different schools. But with you guys and John, you talk, I mean, pretty much every day from what I can gather. Like, what has kept that bond going all these years? I mean, it's just really cool to see that.
We say it's whoever's the glue. You heard Kwame earlier mention the glue that brings us together, right? So, you know, that's a really good question.
I don't know. I thought that was normal, you know. Not until I went away, and they're like, "You're still friends with your high school, you know?" Like, I'm not even friends with my high school, my college buddies. You know, it's like, no, we've been friends longer than you've been born, you know.
Yeah.
So
I think, you know, we grew up at John's house. So John's dad was a vet in Oneonta. It was right on the corner of Southside and 23. And, you know, we literally lived there. You know, I had a really strict mom, and that was literally, like, she was, like, I could spend the weekend there. Like,
that was the place you could go.
And that would where we'd go. You know, we would go play basketball, do whatever, and then we'd end up back at John's, stay up till, well, John and I would stay up till 3 in the morning. Kwame would fall asleep at, like, 12:30. We'd paint his toenails, and then, and then, you know, we'd get up the next day and go play basketball. So, the bond, I mean, I'm sure John would have a much better answer for this. We, you know, unfortunately, we couldn't get him. He's in Seattle. But, you know, it was natural for us. Like, we, and even, like, so before text messaging stuff, we'd call each other every once in a while. So we'd talk every couple of weeks, whatever. But once, you know, texting became a thing in the early 2000s, like, we talk literally, if we go a day without talking, it's like, oh, you know, the next day it's like, hey, what are you guys up to? Like, you know, what's going on?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're very much involved in, you know,
I don't know what it is. It's just,
you know, we just love each other.
Yeah,
you know,
I guess.
Yeah.
He's they're both my best men in my wedding. You know, I couldn't decide which one. So I told my wife, Molly Patterson, shout out. I have to have two. So,
yeah. Well, I've always kind of had been of the same mindset of like, those are your guys for life, right? And I've always thought it was weird that other friends I had that I met later in life, like, they don't talk to anybody from their childhood. Yeah. And it's just like, so in this job, it's cool to see guys still come back together, because I do a bunch of these interviews where they don't, like, players don't remember anything from back then. It's like they have sports amnesia. Like, oh yeah, I think we won that game, but, you know, and it's like, well, you scored 50 points. Yeah, I don't remember any of that.
Yeah.
So I love talking to people who, you know, I'm not saying live in high school. Like, sometimes there's that whole thing. It's like, no, you guys just appreciate what the moment was, which is cool.
And so we use that as a springboard, right? So, like, like, we're always trying to build each other up. Like, Kwame's doing his thing. I mean, I always bust on them because they say they love Oneonta, but they never come, you know, come back enough.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, we get together. I mean, last time we saw each other was Seattle.
No, is that after your wedding or?
Oh shoot, I'm sorry. My wedding, and then we had a couple days here. But like, when we're together, it's we don't miss a beat, right? So Johnny, who I actually was filming, Kwame was going off on a tangent there, and I sent him a text. He's like, "Oh, Kwame telling stories again." So like, we are very involved in each other's lives. You know, even Johnny's on the other side of the globe. Kwame's down in North Carolina, and I'm here. You know, Johnny and I are going to Jamaica together in 19 days. So we're going to, you know, our families are getting together.
That's great. And
for my bachelor party, we went out to Seattle where Johnny lives, and we spent, 4 or 5 days out there together. So there's never been a hiccup in our relationship since first grade, really. You know, it's not to say that we haven't had our squabbles, but, you know, very minor, because, you know,
he's my kid's godfather, you know, and
that's just the good stuff.
Right. Yeah. And I'm an only child. So, like, those are, like, my brothers.
Yeah.
Like, even my kids are like, oh, Uncle Josh, Uncle John, you know.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
So,
well, tell us a little bit about what John is doing. And we're going to get him in here at some point, whether it's all three of you guys together or if John's home, you know, we can hook up with you, Josh. But
yeah,
he's been all over pro sports, really cool stuff.
Yeah.
Give us a little heads up on that.
He's done, like, so I guess the little background is when he was a kid, like, we would go over to his house, he'd make movies. Like, so we're 8, 9 years old, 10 years old, and he's got a camcorder, like, you know, the big thing he put on his shoulder. Yeah. And he's writing, like, little movies, and we're filming, like Child's Play movies, like, where there's a doll. Have some really old movies that are super embarrassing.
I love them, yeah.
But they're great. Like, they're us as little kids, and that was Johnny's love. So he was supposed to be my roommate at Cobisco when we went to college, and, like, 2 months before we're supposed to go, he's like, actually, I'm not going to go to Cobra School. I'm going to go to film school. I'm like,
wow.
All right. Like, which is like, but knowing him and what his passion is, like, it was, that makes sense. Like, go do it. So he went to film school and then started off as an intern with the Marlins for a couple of years.
That's great.
Then he went to the Blue Jackets. Then he went to the
Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
And then he did the Cavs.
Yeah, so he was with LeBron and the Cavs for a bunch of years. Then he was with the WWE.
Then he went to the Golden Knights. The
Golden Knights, and then the Knicks and the Rangers, and now he's with the Kraken. And he's, I don't know if we're allowed to share any further. We'll stop. But he's done, like, so, and he's invited us along the way. So, like, I've been to the NBA Finals.
NHL Finals.
NHL Finals.
Really?
Like, so, you know, he's like, here's a pass. Don't do anything foolish. Don't do anything to get me in trouble. Have fun. Like, so he's brought us along his journey, which his journey has been really, you know, I don't know how much we're allowed to brag about it, but like what he's done in his career has been really amazing. Mm-hmm. And he's shared a lot of it with us.
Yes. And he, wrote his coattails for when he's at the Marlins. I used to be the, lucky winner number 46, seat 46. Oh, that's me. Yeah. You know, my kids get picked in WWE. Hey, you were sitting in the, my kids are on stage and stuff at WWE. You know.
I heard you guys might have had a little, maybe it was in Cleveland. You both were out on the floor shooting.
Man. Oh, yes.
Where'd you hear this one from?
OG.
I got the DVD. And
so I'll say this. So we were like 26.
I don't know.
We were young. Actually, you know who was with us then was Craig Dawson was.
Oh my God.
I brought him out with me. So we're out there. So Johnny gets us chosen to shoot against each other foul shots. So whoever side of the arena wins, the whole side of the arena gets free pizza. Right? So people are engaged, right? Mom, earmuffs. I had been drinking for a while. Or actually, probably everybody earmuffs for this story. So I'm on the court in front of 20,000 people. And I hadn't shot in the basket, you know, it wasn't fun. Like, but it was tied 3-3 till late.
Long story short.
Kwame's shooting threes, trying to show off.
No. Listen, I'm at the free throw. This guy's throwing some weak passes, like throwing in my pocket, like hit. And I'm hitting shots, and I hear the crowd and stuff. And then I don't know if I was up or down, but I was like, this is the last time I'm going to be on the NBA court with all these people watching me.
Oh, hold on. It was the Cavaliers versus the Heat.
The Heat
when
with Shaq.
Shaq and D-Wade are on the like, court waiting for a bump to get off.
I'm looking over at D-Wade and like the Miami Vice, and I go about and shoot a three. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to take some advantage of this and shooting threes. Long story short, you know, who comes victorious? Yeah. Me. And I.
So the funny part of the story is I probably back rimmed front rimmed like six in a row. Right? That perception also, you're in a real, there's no, you know.
Yeah, it's way different.
So I'm walking around the arena afterwards and my side of the arena is not real happy with me because I didn't get free pizza. I'm walking through the arena like an hour later and some guy comes up to me and says, come on, man, you need to bend your knees up. You got to bend those knees. You got to get that over the front rim.
This guy looks like he can't even play.
Oh, my God.
It was so funny. Actually, I'm pretty sure I threw that DVD away because it was hard to watch.
But also like Mario Lemieux went to Blue Jackets games and met him, you know, through John and just so many things, and so proud of him, the stuff that he's done from Little Oneana, and he's very humble and all that stuff. And like,
that's so cool. Well, I heard there was the John Greco game, is what Coach Z called it. He had 21 points in a big game, maybe Section 4 finals.
It was Section 4 finals. So, man, so he was on fire. He probably would have scored 30, but he has big feet, and he had his foot on the line on like 4 threes, so they were two. So, you know, the worst shot in basketball. So it's funny, that is the John Greco game, but it's also the game that I scored my career high and eclipsed 1,000 points in that game.
Oh, in that game?
But that's the John Greco game.
Yes. Right. And John.
And well, I mean, Waverly came out on fire in the first quarter, mm-hmm. but John, like, and John didn't shoot like that. Like, he was a team player.
He shot like we played one on one. He shot the lights out.
Like
he's so scared of Coach Z. Yeah.
So he just never did, and he came out and he scored like 14 or whatever points in the first quarter, and it kept us in the game. And then we ended up, you know, smoking him.
So John outscores me for the first time in his life. You know,
not me.
Josh scores 1,000 points. All right, so I'm like, what can I do? I don't think I did it on purpose. They'll say I did, but these other guys were coming in. We had the game in hand, and I'm about to shoot my free throws. Like, if I make it, you know, I get subbed out. I don't know if I made or missed it on purpose, but I missed it. So I'm in there for one more possession, and I was doing my little signature in and out move. I wanted to get a dunk. It's like, that guy got 1,000 points. John's outscoring me. I need to get a dunk in the arena just for everyone, for the crowd. So I went to half court set, and I went to go do my little crossover. and I crossed my own self over it
and
sprained my ankle. And we had to play the next round of the game was against Red Hook.
Yes.
So my ankle because I was trying to show off and get a dunk in the arena against Waverly.
And that playing in the arena back then was not like there was dead spots on the floor. Yeah. It was cold down there. Cold.
And like if it's too much heat, like slippery and stuff. And
I can't believe how cold it is on the floor. They had states there the last few years for boys before it went back to Glens Falls.
Yeah.
And you know, doing some sectional games down there, it's cold.
Yeah, it's really cold. I did not enjoy playing.
Had good games.
We played a lot of good games there, but the depth perception, just dead spots on the floor. Like I never liked playing there.
I think one of my good games. I was outshining Josh when my sophomore year when I was player of the year, first time ever.
Oh my God.
Daily Star,
people
right?
Can't tell. People think you're so conceited right now because you can't tell they're tongue in cheek right now.
I know. That is bad. This is all rivalry stuff, guys, for Josh. Mm-hmm. But played some great games against the Posen and Delhi and stuff.
Yes.
At the arena. It was awesome place to play, especially coming from Oneonta.
Well, it was exciting to play there, but it wasn't like a good environment. Like it wasn't like the floor was cold. There was dead spots. It was wet. Like
but
it was exciting.
Like a whole bunch of people get to watch.
Yeah,
And then playing in the Stop DWI for a couple of years.
Yeah,
like
I heard one was a regional bracket, and then you guys got in the national bracket.
that was less fun.
Yeah, Lamar Odom and stuff. Oh yeah, those guys.
Wow.
Yeah,
so you played against?
No.
Oh okay.
They had we had won a game, we might. that was tough. Like. We went through, that was junior year. We lost 5 straight games. We were under 500 the first time in our life. We'd never even lost 5 games in a year. We lost 5 in a row. We lost a league game against Sydney 40-39, which was we just played terrible. Mm-hmm. Then we lost 3 straight of the national division. Then we played Jimmy Evans and those guys at Whitney Point and lost there. First time we'd ever lost to them. And we're like looking at each other like, who are we? What's going on? And then we won it. A bunch of games straight until we lost in the sectionals.
But. We lost in the final this our sophomore year to Trumansburg with
Damon Reed.
Yes.
Damon Reed and I played on the Empire State game together. He's such an awesome guy and such a tough player.
Like we said earlier, everybody had a guy back then. That's what I love looking back at those times because I'm like, wish I'd seen that guy. Wish I'd seen that guy.
Yeah.
But tell us about the Red Hook game, which I'm told, Josh, you just went off. Had a career type of game, and I think Red Hook had a guy who was 6'7", goes on, plays at Navy or somewhere D1, but that was your coming out party kind of, and it was, I think it was at Hartwick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a game that, they were, 2 or 3 in the state? They were averaging, 80 points a game.
Yeah.
They'd won, 23 straight games, right?
Yeah, I think they had 3 guys averaging 20.
Yeah, I mean, they had 3. I remember Jesse Court, who's a junior, already had 1,000 points.
Jamie Nero,
who was the kid that played in Navy, and then another kid. I mean, they were studs.
Another kid played at St. Rose, I think.
Yeah, they were all big guys. They were, they came in there thinking that, they were like, oh man, luckily we're playing Oneonta, right? Yeah. And we didn't know any better, so we're like, we're just going to play our game. So it wasn't even close. I mean, the first quarter was close, and then,
That 1-3-1 zone, I just found the right spots, and you guys was just look under opposite, and Josh was there every time.
Yeah, it was one of those games where you look back now, you still get, if we talk about it with our friends, if Brad Hessel's here and guys from our team and Greg, we would get chills talking about the game because we were we didn't know we were supposed to lose that game. I mean, and we were up 20-something in the third quarter, was this supposed to be hard? I don't mean to make it sound like that, but we're playing our game and we defensively we shut. I mean, they didn't have an open three. So, I mean, that they were a 3-point shooting team. We didn't give them a single open three. We sat in our 2-3 zone and
jeez.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And then then they tried to press us in the fourth quarter. We broke the press 9 times in a row. I mean, it was one of those games and we're playing at Hartwick where it was, packed. Like it was standing room only. I mean, people still come up to me and talk about that game. That was the game that people are that game was unbelievable. the atmosphere, just, you know, being there like they still talk about, which is so cool.
And that was the game. I had a bum ankle. I had to get a shot. My foot was in an ice bucket before the game. I was limping.
How mad was Coach Z?
And stuff. Oh, yeah. I don't even think so I shook mad. Hands at Waverly. I just sat on the bench and these guys came to me. But yeah, like my ankle was button. We still overcame all that stuff. And I remember trying to jump off, you know, my leg to,
you know. Well, you had a dunk or something, right? And you couldn't get up?
Yeah, I tried to dunk, but I couldn't get
up. Well, for me, just on a quick side note, that game and the next game was at Marist, right? Oh, those were the games. These are some of my early moments where I heard those games on the radio.
Yeah.
And it was like, that sounds like a really cool job. Like, you know, it must have been Jeff Bishop and whoever back then. I'm not sure who it must have been. But I'm like, these guys are so cool. Onion is cool. Like, how awesome it must be to be at that atmosphere in those games.
I listened to that game on the radio probably like 8 years ago. I think I found a cassette.
Wow.
I'm like, all right, I got to find a cassette player.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I listened to that and I was like, that brought me back. I was like, wow, that was really cool.
Cool.
Yeah. And then, you know, bring up the Marist game.
Oh, yeah.
That was.
Yeah, so tell me about that game. Coach Z was a little fuzzy. He knew that you thought maybe you guys were going to play a team that had Elton Brand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we were supposed to.
And they got upset.
Yeah. So that would have been more embarrassing probably. You know, 6'3", 175-pound guarding 6'8". You know,
but they had some turmoil anyway. Like their point guard was upset that, you know, Elton Brand's going to Duke in this, so he was taking more shots, you know.
And so there was some internal strife going on there. So we played Walter Panis, which had some studs also. They had one of the kids inside and a pitching at Penn State. One of the kids went to Hartwick and played for Nick and actually was a teammate of mine for a year. And
they were huge. They were like 6'7", 6'5", 6'4", 6'4", 6'2".
If the year before we had Eli, who was 6'11", Odell, who was 6'8", Mark Miller was 6'4", 6'5", me, you know, we were big, really big. And then they all left. So, like, it was me, and we brought up Lucas Burry as a sophomore, who was, like, 6'4", but, you know, a sophomore. So, like, we had no height left. So we're playing against these monsters, like,
and
we
– and they hit their first – at least I won't exaggerate, but at least their first three shots were threes and they made them.
Yeah.
It was like 9-0 at least before going to time. I would say 12, but I didn't want to watch that game ever.
So we played from behind, which we didn't do. Like, not only did we not do it very often, but we almost never, through our entire careers, never played behind. And we caught all the way back. We got within like 5 of the third quarter. They hit a 40-foot three at the buzzer at the end of the third quarter, put them up 8-1 in the fourth. We came all the way back. I remember this very vividly. So they had the backboards with the Nerf that sticks out.
Yeah.
So the kid that goes for a 1-1, I think we're down, I don't know, maybe 2 late in the game. I go up to grab a rebound. And this is when you were on the block, below the block, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I go up to grab the rebound, and it hits the Nerf and bounces over my hands. And I miss the rebound. They get the rebound. We have to foul them again. They make a couple foul shots. We're down 3. Do you want to take it from here?
I think I might have airballed the 3 to tie it in the closing seconds. But
couldn't have been an easy shot, though.
No, I don't know. But
listen, it was like –
well, we wouldn't have been in that position if, you know, when I passed to the wide open Josh Brown,
I did miss a layup. I was 8 for 9 in the second half.
And that was the key layup to put us up, you know.
You guys act like you got blown out by 50, though. Right?
It was a game we should have won.
Okay.
For real. Like, to even give you a little bit more background, like, we thought we were always going to win a state championship, right? So, like, we were undefeated growing up, seventh grade, we're undefeated, you know, coming up through high school. We're like, that was our goal. Like, we're like, and we didn't think. We're like, we're definitely going to win a state championship.
We saw Norwich do it. It's like, it's easy. Yeah. Like, Norwich, they did it.
We'll figure it out. Like, and then, you know, junior year, we hit a hiccup. We're like, what the hell? Like, these guys got – I didn't mean to swear. Sorry about that.
No. We've had Lambros on
here. Oh, man. So, like, you know, we're like, all right. Like, we recalibrated. So, like, going into senior year, we're like – the difference between us junior year and senior year was like we never got – you know, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face. Junior year, we got punched in the face. We're like, maybe we're not as good as we think we are, right?
Okay.
We ended up 15 and 16 the year, which was an embarrassing year for us,
right.
I think.
Right.
We were just like, how did that happen? I mean, three of them were national DWI division losses, but still.
Very true.
And we also lost to William Campbell.
Yeah.
From EFA, 6'8", played at UAB.
Oh, yeah. Wow. So 2 years in a row, sophomore year and junior year, we lost to EFA, which they were studs. Like they had Bebop Williams, the point guard, who was a ridiculous athlete, and Robert Campbell, who's 6'8", 280. I mean, he was a monster. And he
did a bunch of wings. Yeah,
he
always got in some trouble, but then came out and played against us. Always had a chance to play against us.
Yeah. So our sophomore year, we were tied going into the fourth quarter, and they beat us by like 11, I think. And then our junior year, we play them again, and we're up 20 with 4 minutes left in the third quarter and end up going to overtime and losing overtime.
We're up 29 in that game, I think.
Oh, whatever. It was embarrassing.
Heartbreak. Bebop Williams, you know, he was a running back for EFA. He was real strong. Like, I was more afraid to go against him because he was physical than, like, when I went against Tim Wynn. Little short guys always had trouble with. Taller guys are fine, but little short guys low to the ground, muscle.
Quick.
It's like, geez, you know. And they were tough. They were gritty. They didn't back down. And
yeah, they were. That was a tough one.
So
2 years in a row.
Our senior year, we didn't have to see EFA anymore. Like, oh, this is going to be our year. This is it. And then these Walter Prentice guys come through. And
yeah, it was. I mean, and they hit that game against us. They hit like 8 threes, right? The next game, they're in Glens Falls. They go 0-for-3s.
Yeah.
So you were one game away from Glens Falls.
Yes, and we shouldn't have. Well, not shouldn't have been, but you know how, I don't know, it's like every other year or every couple of years, you got to play like a double game before you go to the Final Four.
Yeah.
And I just remember, because we saw Laser play and the Foil play our freshman year, and I was looking at all like in Glens Falls, he's like Mark Jackson assist records or this. Yeah. I was like, just give me a chance to play in the Final Four so I can like just get my name up there to do one of those things.
Yeah.
And it was just snuffed out from us. But
yeah, it was tough, and that was that night, or was it the next day, Biggie got shot and killed? I mean, it was like, you know, for kids growing up, it was a rough weekend.
Yeah. Man. Well, and that's the thing. Anytime I get a chance to talk to someone who was able to get that state championship or someone who's been close, it shows you how the road, like, you have to have a little luck. You got to have the skill, the right people, the right time, the right day.
Yeah, right.
Kind of amazing.
We got to see it, though, because our girls won it that year.
Yeah, very true.
And they were, I mean, that group was unbelievable, right? Like, you couldn't even have drafted. You couldn't have recruited a better team.
No.
I mean, and they all came from the same area at the same time. I mean, you had Chrissy, who was unbelievable. You had Tiff, Stacy, and then you had Karen Pete. Like,
you had like three girls 5'10 and above or so.
Yeah. You know? And they could ball. It wasn't like they were stiffs. Like, they were ballers. Like, it was, you know. And so they played in Marist the same day we did. They won. We lost. We're on the same bus as them on the way home. It was like, they're trying to celebrate. We're
I remember
wiping tears out of our eyes. Like, how did this just happen? Like, you know, this isn't the way it was supposed to end.
Yeah.
I remember we watched Hoosiers on the way there. Right.
Love that. That's
and,
great.
I hated that movie for about 10 years after this. Like, it was like a hex, like, I didn't let my, like, even coaching now, I don't let my kids watch Hoosiers before the game or that stuff. Just, I'm superstitious about that, those type of things. But, like, little things like that, I remember. And the bus ride home, and, like, I can't believe it's over. What do we do now?
Right. And, like, not wanting to be petty about it, but, like, I just didn't want to see anybody for, like, I'm like, I don't know how you get over. And, you know, the great thing about, like, lessons like that are, like, they prepare you for, you know, life, right? Like, it's like, you know, it's not always going to go your way. Like, and if you can take the lessons from that, like these disappointments, and use them as fuel for, you know, your next step, then, you know, maybe it wasn't meant to be. Like, and honestly, growing up, like, at least me, like, I'm like, there was no doubt we were winning a state championship. Like, we are primed for it. We worked so hard. Like, we dedicated our lives. I don't want to say that. We didn't dedicate. Like, we just played a lot of basketball. Yeah. We loved it. And, you know, we were always trying to improve. We were always trying to play against better athletes, you know, people better than us to make us better. And we came up short that day, and it sucked.
Yeah.
Well, you look at the Norwich guys right before you, Sydney guys who you're friends with right after you.
Yeah.
It's like, what didn't go right for us.
Yeah. You know? And, you know, it's funny because we, you know, I'm good friends with Craig.
Yeah.
And we played at Cobeskill together the year, he's a year younger than me. And, you know, they just had the right combination of, like, they had, you know, the younger Eric coming up, who was a stud.
Miley,
his brother, Jason Dorsey, who just got healthy. Because we crushed him, I think, both times we played him the year before.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, like, crushed him. And then, so this one's for you, Bubba. I scored my – I broke the school record at Oneonta with Dawson guarding me.
So
I have a nice pitcher. I send him every once in a while of that. Yeah, it was an assist from Kwame. It was out of bounds play. And it's not even really that big a deal because Dawson didn't card anybody. But
he's somebody I'd love to get in.
You hear that, Bub?
Yeah.
He's bashful. He needs to have somebody in with him.
But sometimes it takes a while for people to warm up. I'd love to get some of the Oneonta girls in here. You know, if the timing's right.
Yeah.
I mean, those are all people I'd love to chat with. Yeah. But yeah,
maybe this will open that floodgate.
I hope so.
Like that experience, like in with coaching, like we went to the Final Four. We were a game away from the state championship, and it was like early in my career. And I was talking to the guys, like, you know, you got to take advantage of this. You never know when you're gonna come back. But all the guys think, well, we're juniors and we're sophomores. We'll be back.
We got time,
it's fine.
Man.
We got time. With this, and the next year we're even better. We're ranked in the nation and doing this. And you know, I had three studs, had a kid from the private school. Like, oh, I guess public school is pretty cool. Let me come back. Came back. So we were bigger and better and everything, and fell short again. It was like just guys, one guy's hurt, you know, one guy couldn't play because his knee. And, you know, just things like that. You just got to take advantage when it's there. You got to, you know.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you guys this, because one thing we usually talk about on the podcast, we have a lot of younger listeners. Everybody wants to try to play in college. And, you know, you guys have had the experience of going and playing at the next level. I know times have changed and recruiting is different now, but Kwame, you as a coach, I mean, Josh, you're around young athletes as well now. Would you have advice for them on how to choose to make the next step? A lot of people don't know how to take that first step, how to get on a coach's radar. We talk a lot about that. And just they don't quite know how to pursue their dreams, I guess.
So for me, I went to Cobeskill for the first years. They were a JUCO program back then, and they were coming off a year where they were, you know, I think they made the Elite Eight and for D3 JUCO, and they were legit. Brad Z had played there, so Coach Z was really familiar with their coaches. I wasn't exactly sure where I wanted to go. I was getting recruited by pretty much every D3 and a few D2 schools, you know, my thought was like, all right, I want to go someplace and I want to win, right? I want to go play with really good players. So I went to Cobeskill and I played with really good players. And I just worked really, like, I don't know. I wasn't promised anything. You know, I wanted to go there and I wanted to work really hard and see where I'd fall in. You know, my freshman year, we ended up playing in the Final Four. I think we were 30-5 that year. And there were some really talented players. And by the end of the year, I was starting. My sophomore year, we had an even better team. We started off the year ranked number one in the country for JUCO. And we lost our first – Matt Miller was on the team.
Yeah, right.
We lost our first two games. And we were looking around like, what is going on? And we came back and we ended up having a great year. But, you know, leaving there, I got recruited again because now I'm going to a four-year school. And, you know, I'm trying to decide where I want to go. I was visiting schools all over. And – that was the year my grandfather was still around, and I decided on Hartwick. So I'm like, you know, it'd be really nice to come back. Nick had just left. It was Tugger's second year. Hmm. You know, I'd known Tugger my whole life.
Yeah.
You know, that was an easy decision for me because it was somebody I was comfortable with. And I think that, you know, the kids that are coming up that are getting recruited, you have to be really comfortable with the coaches that are going to have your best interest, right? But you also want to be careful not to get promised things because – once they get you in the door, you are there, yeah. Right? So if you go somewhere, first of all, you know, make sure that, you know, your parents and whoever is helping you make the decision, get to know the environment that you're going to be in, because you will spend a lot of – college is different than high school, where you will spend a lot and a lot and a lot of time with your coaches and your other players. But you have to also understand that if someone promises you something – it's probably not going to hold up because things change. So you want to make sure that if you're talking to a coach, hey, coach, if I work really hard, where do you see me this year or where do you see me in the future? Not, you know, what can you promise me? You know, I really want to start as a freshman. Like, right. Those aren't the goals you should have. It's, listen, if I work really hard, where do you see me fitting in?
I love that. That's good.
Yeah, my journey was similar. I was a non-qualifier, even though I was getting D1 recruits for basketball, like Canisius and Fairfield and stuff like that. And I was like a parade, you know, high school All-American first team for football, but I didn't want to play football, so I had hoop dreams. So yeah. Josh went to Cobeskill, and I got sent down to Florida for a JUCO. To Pasco Hernando, it was a Division I JUCO down there. And, you know, I go down there, and I'm at practice, and hey, guys, you know, just being nice. And guys are like, no, you know, I'm competing against you. Like, it was like we're going at each other. Like, and I never had that in Oneon. It's like, Oneon, everyone just laid out the red carpet. Hey, call me whatever you want, whatever you want. And you didn't realize how the competition was. And we were pretty good. We went out to the national championships and had to go against, like, Steve Francis and Sean Marion. Really? For those games, I think. And then we were Indian Hills with Pete Michael, who ended up at Cincinnati. We were, like, their 77th victim in a row. They're still, like, a prominent JUCO program. After that, you know, after my 2 years, you know, like, I was injury prone. And, you know, Mick from Cincinnati, who is this Bob Huggins assistant coach.
Okay.
And I was going to go there and just, like, you know, do what I can there. And things didn't work out. So I left to go to, it's like, you know, to a Division II school, which, you know, it's lower to Division I. So I should be able to, you know, do whatever I want there and play. Ended up playing football there too.
Mansfield.
Yeah. Yep. But you know, my advice, like going through all those experiences and being injured and coming from, you know, Kwame so great to you're just a regular person like everyone else. So like I get to my guys is like, be humble, number one, which not that I was cocky or anything, but like just be humble and like work hard. I never really was pushed to work hard. And I always see guys on my team or guys at the next level, the ones who get the playing time, the guys who benefit the most is working hard all the time. The guys who are just sitting back, you know, those guys are going to be, you know, fall through the cracks. Like, I saw Aaron Gordon.
Yeah.
I saw him, his AU was playing against one of my players, his AU team, Oakland Soldiers, playing against, you know, the Charlotte team. And I was like, hey, who's that? He's like, oh, that's Aaron Gordon. He's supposed to be pretty good. But I wouldn't know going to the warm-up line because he would work the hardest. He was clapping his hands. I was like, those are stuff that the sorry guys do. You know, the guys on the bench. Like,
yeah.
But that's what you got to do. You know, you got to go someplace where you're going to play. Someplace where you're going to have the best opportunity for yourself. Doesn't matter if it's Division I, these Division I hoop dreams, go to your level. And so you could just play. It doesn't matter. Guys, you'd rather have a great D3 career than, oh, I sat the bench at Duke and, you know, didn't experience anything. So go to a place where you're going to play and enjoy life and whatever is going to keep you going, because I wouldn't be in the position I am today if it wasn't for sports. Like I played, you know, I got through high school because I played sports. Went to college, I played sports, it got me through college, you know, and even with my job, like I'm almost like I'm coaching. So it's like I love it's coaching so much that I, you know, it's part of my job.
If it helps you out, like you've never been Kwame Patterson, I mean, you've always just been another guy.
it was just different. Like when I went down there, it was just, these guys are from, oh, you're from New York, you know, and, you know, all these Florida guys, and guy from Atlanta, guy from Kentucky, this, all this melting pot. And like, I thought we were supposed to be teammates. Like Josh Brown would never talk to me like that or battle me like that. But, you know, it's different in college.
How easy would it have been to quit when you got there?
Oh, so easy. Like, and even with me, like, I couldn't dunk like I used to, because I had 5 surgeries in 5 years in college.
Wow.
So it was like I was under the knife every year, and I had to learn how to shoot because I couldn't shoot before. I had to learn how to shoot. And I was like, you know what? This is, I'm done. And
yeah, the transition between high school and college is no joke. Especially, I mean, I didn't play D1, so I'm sure that was, you know, you're playing with straight studs. Like, I was a, you know, in high school, I'm a 6'3", 175-pound power forward. When I go to college, that's not the position I can play, right? So, like, the transition between high school and college is huge, because it's a different game. I mean, and that was 25 years ago. But it's different, right? Like, you know, you're playing against guys that are quicker, faster, stronger, have a higher, you know, basketball IQ, and you're trying to catch up and be like, okay, like, what do I need? You know, how do I need to improve to you know, compete against these guys? And it started, like, for, at least for me, it was like literally day one on campus. Like, you go and you play around, and there's guys that aren't even on the team that were like, wow, that guy's really good. And it's like, oh, no, he's a player. You're like, that guy's not on the team. Like, oh, man. Like, you know, so you get, again, everybody's got to play until they get punched in the face. And then, you know, you figure your way around. Like, all right, like, you know, it's not so bad. Like, you figure it out.
Even at D3, there's some guys, they were one of the best players on their high school team.
Yeah.
So it's something like that. And those guys probably want it more because, you know, you're playing D3, so you want it more. You're not getting all this, you know, rolling out the red carpet of, oh, big guy on campus, this is, but you want to be there.
Yeah, there's no luxuries in D3, Clem. I'll tell you some stories later.
but my guys, like, my kids they're all about, oh, it's either Duke or nothing. Or it's, right. it's like no, it's like, we look at the All-State team. The, you know, only two guys are going to UNC Greensboro or Asheville. It's like, you know, no one's going to these great places. So don't, you know, set your goals high, but understand that if a D3 school comes around or the junior college comes around and there's less money to pay for school, that's your ticket. You know, you go where you want it, you know. Yeah. So
I think it's interesting right now because Teddy McGraw, Oneonta guy.
Yeah.
Pitching and having a great time at Wake Forest. We've had him in here twice, and he talked about his struggles, especially when he first got there. But, you know, he seems to have the golden touch right now. And we also have a girl. She just finished her freshman year playing D1 at UMBC basketball. And we've had a couple of good softball players, too, go D1. And everybody kind of puts them up on this pedestal. And we've tried to preach here on the podcast, like you guys said, go where you're going to play, go where the coach is the right fit, the school's the right fit, the academics are the right fit. So I'd love to hear you guys say that because it's great advice. It doesn't have to be Duke or nothing, you know?
Right.
So that's huge. We've gone through a lot of stuff here.
Yeah.
Am I forgetting anything?
I can talk forever about things,
we have our famous wrap-up question in a minute here. But okay. I mean, we can definitely do this. I know you're not here a lot, Kwame, but you're very gracious with your time.
I'll be back in October to watch this guy get inducted.
All right.
Well,
maybe even we got to do round two.
Even though I got inducted 10 years ago. Yeah. But he's just catching up.
You're so, in, and
you played
too?
A whole bunch of boring sports. I specialized in basketball.
It's got to be rare that a one sport guy gets in.
Oh, Nate, make sure you're there for my speech because I got some good stuff that I'm going to bring out about that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he got in with one sport. I had to play everything from soccer
we'll bring it over to this conversation for a quick second. So, like, as I said before, my first love, I don't know, maybe we're talking offline about this, my first love was baseball, right?
Yeah.
So I was a really good baseball player growing up. And I had to quit because Kwame and John both stopped playing. And you brought Joe Hughes up before. So Joe was our JV coach. So I have some really good Joe Hughes stories too. But back to this, I would probably have been with Ortiz right now getting inducted had these guys continued to play baseball. But because they didn't play, like, I didn't have a good, like, you know, it wasn't my guys playing baseball anymore. Coach Hughes stopped coaching for those couple of years. And not that Mike Jester was a coach. He's a great guy. But, you know, I kind of used all those things as, hey, you know what, I'm just going to concentrate on basketball now.
Yeah.
So, like I said, he was like our big brother. Well, I've only been in the principal's office once in my life, and it was because they brought all three of us in and say, why aren't you guys playing baseball? And I was like, because Josh is not playing baseball, so I'll run track or do something different.
Yeah. To so Teddy's Josh's credit, right? Like, baseball around here is tougher because, who wants to practice in a gym, baseball in the gym, for the first, you know, 45 days of the season?
Yeah.
Like, all right, the first time we get outside is the first game of the year, and it's going to be 25 degrees out.
The snow bank is to catch our balls.
Yeah, it's like, oh.
What he's been able to accomplish, you know, I don't want to say coming from here, but it's different, you know?
Yeah.
It's a hard road, but had a lot of good people helping him, and he's a great, great kid.
It's not like his family doesn't have some talent in there.
Yeah.
Tugger. Talk about people growing up playing against. We've just grown up playing against Tugger. You know, freaking guy couldn't jump over the foul line, but his shot is so quick you can't guard him.
You can't stop this Kwame. I was like, this guy doesn't miss.
I can say this because he coached me for 2 years. He's the worst trash talker ever, but
No. Gary DeLello. DeLello is the worst, right? Or I mean, like
too nice to be a trash talker.
Or like the verbiage, or because Gary was horrible. He was 5 foot. He's like, I'm 5 foot 11 blocking our shots, but he's like 5'6", I think, in real life first. Something like that. But Gary's talk trash too. I don't know. He hung around to talk more, but
yeah.
Tug would Nick would oh I'm talk trash. Everyone did.
Nick would come to our practices, right? So like Nick had been retired, or you know, he would only come around occasionally. And when he came to practice, he was trying to get us to like he was trying to like stir some stuff up. Like he you know, he was relentless.
I loved having him in here. That was one of my it was one of my favorite.
He episodes. Should have his own like series. Oh. Like first of all, the amount of like I was talking to these guys, like I'm at the baseball fields, the village.
All-Star Village.
And yeah. Going into like where the bar area is, I'm just looking at a trophy case and stuff, and I look in there, I'm like, that looks like a picture of Nick and Mickey Mantle. And it's sure enough, under it's like, oh, Nick Lamros and Mickey Mantle. It's like the stories that this guy can tell, like, you know, he needs to be.
Seth Greenberg still complains today. I'm the one who got the 1-3-1 zone started. Nick's like, no, he stole it from me. And like, yeah. They're going back and forth. I'm like, Seth, you know, that crazy Greek, you know, and every conversation I had when I first started coaching North Carolina started off with the Nick Lambro story, and then everyone knew Nick Lambro.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I'd love to get him in here again because I feel like I just got a few of
Well, you're going to need to stories. Have a yeah. that was it the big E where it's
Yeah. Well, the beauty of the podcast is I'm not on the radio, so we can let it fly, and he let it fly. Okay? He let it fly. So Well, our most important question, I'll be interested for Kwame's answer since he's not here all the time, is favorite local place to eat.
Local place to eat.
Yeah. So do you have an Oneonta spot when you come home?
I do. Well, I know it's cliche, but I guess it's either like Tino's with the cold cheese or, what's that place right downtown, right next to Tino's, in between, next to Subway, little breakfast spot.
Latte Lounge.
Yep. Those are the two places my kids go to. My wife, Molly Patterson, I hope I shout out. We go there all the time. Every time we come home, that's what we have to have before we leave Oneonta.
Good choices.
There's zero chance I can answer this question. Zero.
Too many spots.
Oh, no. I got too many people to get mad at me.
That's true.
Oh, shoot. Oh, I love Brooks's too.
Yeah. I guess I could say Brooks, but because that's different. I can't. It's not. Well, it's locally owned, but it's been here forever.
Right.
But like, yeah.
But there's some. Oh, that. Sorry. I was just Mom and Nina's with.
Yeah,
all of them. Like, I I've hit up every single spot from Golden Guernsey to all the way to every spot I hit in Oneonta. And my kids love it too. We go on like a little tour. Like, Dad, there's so many pizza places here and ice cream places here and this. Can we move here? I'm like, no, it's all right.
No. I've been trying to lure Kwame back literally for 15 years.
Is it the weather? You can't do the weather.
It's the weather. My wife's from upstate New York too, so it's not really like that. So I guess it's might be the weather and the taxes.
Yeah,
maybe those combination of those two things.
I can feel your pain, though. Yeah.
My wife said wanted me to say something. Jeez. Oh boy. Not gonna be able to do it. That's something we say all the time. Not gonna be able to do it. Anything someone asks you something, not gonna be able to do it.
Yeah, so, you haven't. There's no Southern accent.
No,
it's never picked up.
No, and I don't want to.
You know, you don't want to.
Not with those guys.
Do you like enunciating too much?
Yeah, but the taxes are too high and the weather's too low.
There's many nights where I'm coming out of a game in Delhi or Walton, and I'm like, how am I going to get home? There's some weird snowstorm. I'm like, what am I doing? What am I doing here? But that's how it is.
Yeah.
Guys, I appreciate the time. We'll do this again. If you want to do it in October, I'm in. And sometime, if Greg is here, we'll do that too.
So,
is he going to come?
I don't know how deep I want to get into this dirty laundry. He missed my wedding, right? So like,
okay.
He's supposed to come for that, but it was like the next day was like the first day of the
Kraken.
The Kraken's like the first game of their history. So he kind of had to be there for that. But he has good intentions of being here in October. So
okay.
We'll see what happens.
Well, stay tuned, folks.
Really appreciate it. Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
This is great.
I love listening to you and finally meeting you and You know, my kids think I'm famous because I do a podcast.
Well, don't like this. I know this is going to be a hit. So for anybody out there listening, we've done a ton of Oneana episodes. So go back in the archives. Lambros, Joe Hughes, Mackie, all those guys. And, you know, we've had Teddy on twice. I took the leap of faith to get Ange McGraw on here and try to get her to talk
that
a little bit.
That was a good one.
So I would like to get Tucker.
It's the first time I heard her voice, actually. I've known her for a long time. That was the first time I heard her voice.
That's probably the most nervous I've been because I've never really heard her talk ever. Yeah. And she did all right. She did well. Good. So, yeah. Well, guys, thank you again.
All right, thanks, Nate. Appreciate
so that'll wrap you. Up episode 190 today here on the podcast. Again, go back in the archives. You can listen to it on the website, any podcast app. It's all right there. That's 190. We'll see you again soon on the Nate Law Podcast.
You've been listening to the Nate Law Podcast. Download each new episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.